Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, I'm Kerry Sparrow. I'm the founder and CEO of Wagescape.
Kerry, thanks so much for making time to join us on Ivy Podcast. Excited about the conversation that we have planned, especially, you know, from a VC standpoint. We invest pretty actively in the HR tech space and just anything that has to do with talent. It's a big problem. It's a challenge for a lot of executives all across. It has been, and it's only growing. So I'm excited about some of the insights that you could share with us. Before we do that, maybe give us a brief thumbnail version of your career prior to this.
Sure, and thanks for having me on the show. I have a bit of what a friend of mine calls a purple squirrel career. It's not something you see all the time. My academic background was in computer engineering. I was in the Navy as a submarine officer for 8 years. I got into management consulting for a very large global firm, Towers Perrin, which is now Willis Towers Watson. Mm-hmm. I was a managing partner there, and then became an executive at a very large multinational here in Minneapolis called Cargill. And so have, you know, been through a number of different roles. I founded Wagescape in 2015 as an opportunity to take advantage of some new approaches, some next generation approaches to help companies understand what's happening in the labor market. Who's hiring? What are they hiring for? What are they paying? In a much more real-time fashion and much more higher definition approach. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years.
Well, that's super exciting. And I would imagine that's very relevant, especially in the current world that we all live in, with, you know, organizations trying to go, you know, back into the offices, maintaining their fully virtual capacities or in some type of a hybrid work environment. I would imagine that you see that firsthand in some of the challenges that organizations face on a daily basis when it comes to that. Tell us a little bit more about your company. What is the opportunity, the problem that you've encountered yourself that really motivated you to go out there and build that?
You know, I had spent a number of years, both in consulting and in the corporate world, building HR and human capital capabilities, technology, process, data, organization, policies, and so forth. And while the world was advancing pretty significantly in the areas of process and technology and even organization, data was really a problem. And especially any kind of market-related data. Companies use data on pay all the time. And where the data actually comes from is really not that great. It's very limited because it comes from surveys. It's old. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of training that goes into people in order to use the data. Compensation specialists have to go through a lot of certification training to use it. And it's really cumbersome and not, you know, nearly as useful as most folks would want. And so I saw that firsthand. And I also saw that a lot of the underlying, you know, barriers to having much better market data were going away. But nobody really seemed to be jumping in on that opportunity. Anytime you've got a really big, you know, segment of the economy and there's really bad information, then you've got enormous frictions in that economy. And we see it all the time in the labor market. And so I founded this company to help take away those frictions and create efficiencies, but also lots of innovation. And that's what we're seeing. We started by being a data as a service company. So we built a data platform that collects just a massive amount of online information about jobs, hiring, and pay, and consolidates it all down into one platform that's updated every day. We track data in about 60 countries right now, but to give you an example of our scale, in the US, we track data on over 80%. It's about 85% of all new jobs being created in the country. And we track it as soon as those jobs are listed. So we see the data and our clients see the data before the jobs are even filled. So it's, you know, instead of having you know, a very backwards looking approach, is which is what you get from economic figures and salary survey figures. You've got a forward looking view, which is about jobs that haven't even been hired yet and what companies are expecting to pay for those. So
you kind of mentioned something interesting, the innovation in that space. When it comes to technology trends and the insights, obviously the AI has been the buzzword, you know, for the past, you know, short period of time. Share some of your personal insights and research maybe that you've done in terms of technologies and everything that you're very excited about in the HR tech space.
Yeah, so we've got a lot that's going on. Like I mentioned, we started as a data as a service company, so selling data to companies that would build, you know, services and technology applications on top of it. But when the pandemic started, we realized that the labor market was going completely out of bounds and nobody had a way to measure what was happening. Nobody really knew what was going on with hiring or pay. All we knew was that it was going up for pay, and that we knew that hiring was completely, you know, out of line with historical norms. But we had the data in our at WageScape. We had the data, and so we actually extended our business model to create an application called WageScape. That's a business intelligence application that lets people see what's going on. That has been extremely well received, and so lots of folks can now see what's going on with hiring, pay, skills, and so forth in real time. But as demand for that data continues to go up, the ways that we can deliver it are also going up. And those are really exciting. So not just a business intelligence portal is one thing, but APIs that can embed intelligence into recruiting applications, for example. So when you open a job rec, you can see immediately what the pay ranges for that job in that market are. You can see who your competitors are, who's hiring and what they're paying. So recruiters can be a lot more effective and hiring managers can be a lot more effective in positioning their jobs to be hired, all through what we call embedded intelligence. AI and especially large language models are going to transform the way that this intelligence is accessed. So we've got prototypes coming online this month for large language models that will use natural language to provide market intelligence. And we'll do it in a way that is not just like what you see with ChatGPT right now, for example, but we'll provide data tables that you can download. We'll provide visuals that you can also, you know, share real time or put into presentations or other documents, in addition to taking your input, however you want to phrase it, and giving you the, you know, the insights that you need. The thing about, you know, the AI models like ChatGPT is they're only as good as the data that they learn from. And when it comes to market intelligence, you can get two types of data. You can get backwards looking data, or you can get the kind of data that we deal with, which is real time forward looking data. So, you know, we're pretty excited about all the different ways people will be able to consume kind of that intelligence and the innovation that will be able to happen as a result of that.
Where do you see, just in general, from your point of view, from your lens where you operate, the labor market is shifting towards to? You know, we've been seeing some mixed data in the news, in the publications, just overall in general, in different sectors. From your point of view, where do you see labor market is going? Where do you see opportunity, and where do you see areas for improvement?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, throughout last year and into the beginning of this year, there was a lot of discussion about layoffs in the area of tech. I think that based on what we're seeing with hiring demand dropped a bit in the beginning of this year, but it's still very strong by historical standards. So there's still a lot of hiring that's going on. Wages, while there's discussion with economic data that's being published about how inflation is beginning to cool off, and it looks like wage inflation might be cooling off, we're seeing exactly the opposite. We see that advertised wages are continuing to go up at unprecedented levels. To give you an idea, the beginning of 2021 through the middle of 2022, advertised wages across all jobs at all levels went up on average 20% a year over that over that time period. And then it tapered off a little bit, but throughout this year, it's resumed that rate. So 20% per year growth in advertised wages across all jobs. And it really varies by location and by jobs. There are parts of the country where, we're seeing wage inflation that's upwards of 60%, and other parts of the country where it's actually shrinking a little bit. But on average, it's growing at unprecedented levels. That is true across industries, too. So it's not, it's not specific to any one industry. It's not leaving any industries behind. I think that the, shift to remote work from the, during the height of the pandemic, really opened a lot of companies' eyes in terms of where they can source talent from, not just where they have locations. And we're definitely seeing a shift back to hybrid work and to in-office work in the numbers. But I think folks have just gotten a lot savvier about where they can find talent. And as wages have gone up, job seekers also have a lot more options available to them now. And not in a good way for employers. For example, last year we were doing some work with a client that one of their clients was a machine shop operation. And they, historically had been paying entry level at about $18 an hour. $18 an hour in most communities right now is pretty much the standard for any entry level job. So if you're looking for any, any kind of specialized skills, you're going to have to adjust your expectations pretty notably in order to get those. And most employers are feeling that now. But we see that as poised to continue.
You've mentioned companies shifting from fully virtual remote environments. Those are trying to build some type of a hybrid setup or maybe bring the people back into the offices. Some executives struggle, some executives succeed in that space. What are some of the recommendations you have for them in order to be able to effectively, execute on the particular strategy that they had laid out? For example, if you were a fully virtual shop, but you're now trying to bring some people back into the offices, what are some of the things that you would recommend or execute if you were, let's say an executive or HR exec at a large corporation?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of, that's really kind of a knotted ball of thread to unravel in terms of all the different considerations with what kind of policies and enablement companies put in place for hybrid, remote, and office work. I will say that when I think about this question, so as an example, I founded our company to be entirely virtual back in 2015, so before remote was even a thing. And did it for two reasons. One was to avoid having to, incur facilities costs, which usually has an ROI of negative 100%. And the other is to be able to source talent from anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're good at coordinating and building culture virtually, that works fine. I think some companies, struggle with those things. But the first thing I would suggest is just ensure that, you're looking through a relevant frame of reference. And by relevant, I mean, look at what the market is doing and look at what your competitors are doing and look at what your customers are asking for and your suppliers and other partners and what the employees are now expecting, because those expectations are all changed. There are several million companies that have formed since the pandemic started that are entirely remote right now. Those folks have cost structures that are totally different. They have resource options that are totally different than folks that operate in fixed facilities. And those are your competitors and those are your suppliers. And so if you're going to go hard on trying to bring people back in the office, recognize the limitations associated with that, not just in terms of employer preferences, but who you're going to be competing with. Because there's a growing, a growing cadre of companies that are competing using a remote model or a heavily hybrid model. And we're not talking about the positions that have to be physically next to product or next to customers, because there are a number of those positions. But we're talking about positions that are knowledge worker positions or are can be light industrial positions that can be done anywhere, literally. So have a relevant frame of reference on this, not just a desire to reclaim certain strengths that you had experienced in the past with in-office cultures, but recognize that the world has changed and your competitors and suppliers have changed. The other thing is talent is more empowered now than ever. And so ever probably in the history of talent, it's more empowered now than ever. Folks, you know, have had a very strong experience with a much more adaptable approach to work. And there's a lot of benefits from a lifestyle standpoint that remote work offers. And a lot of individuals are not going to want to give those up. So, you know, we're talking about everything from, you know, wardrobe costs to commute costs to childcare costs to flexibility around, you know, childcare and you know, everything that's in your life. And, you know, the reviews, I think, are a little bit mixed on the productivity. But in general, there's lots of ways to be even more productive, you know, in a remote environment. Hybrid
kind of you couldn't have set me up any better for the next question that I have for you from a standpoint of, you know, maintaining or increasing the productivity of your employees, especially if you're operating in a fully remote virtual environments and or some type of a hybrid setup. What are the different strategies that may have worked well for you, or maybe some of the lessons learned through that activity? Maybe share some insights from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot that rests on the shoulder of leadership and a lot that has to be done from a culture standpoint. So leaders need to be present in a very different way. They need to be present, you know, with their teams. Like as an example, I meet with all of my direct reports 3 to 4 times individually a week. And then as a leadership team twice a week. The average length of my one-on-one meetings is 20 minutes. Very focused, you know, so very present with the team, but very focused, not a lot of extra meetings, just, you know, working through big agendas, very focused on things that need to be done, decisions that need to be made. And as a result, we can work very, very fast. But the other result of that is that my team gets the support they need from me. And as a CEO, I set the tone for the entire company through my own presence. Culture, there are different things that have to be done in order to sustain culture. It's not to say that physical presence isn't required. It really can enhance culture, but it's not required as much, I don't think. And so, you know, leaders have to, you know, be very mindful of, how to sustain, you know, nurture and sustain strong connections, a strong sense of identity, corporate identity, and the best values from a culture standpoint when folks aren't necessarily present. And this is something that effective companies have already figured out. And so this is not, you know, blinding insights, you know, from somebody that's, you know, completely out of the realm. This, a lot of companies have already figured out how to lean into building really strong cultures with a remote workforce.
In terms of employee development, or let me rephrase that, some of the most effective leadership strategies that I had seen firsthand, I actually utilized myself for my teams, is at the end of the day also, you know, prioritizing and focusing on the goals and objectives of each individual employee in terms of even their personal goals outside of work environment. What are some of the ambitions? What is something that really drives them? And try to match that with the type of help you need at your organization and see how that could actually be connected. I think that's a winning formula in any type of situation. But just in general, maybe your personal leadership strategies that really help you not only retain the top talent, but motivate them to operate at the highest levels without jeopardizing, the areas that would lead to some type of a burnout. Maybe mm-hmm. share some of the insights that you utilize, or maybe you've seen others in the industry succeed in that space.
Yeah, it's so first of all, it starts before even anyone's hired. And so I'm speaking from the perspective of a CEO of a very small but fast-growing business. And so everyone that I bring in, the first thing I want to know is, what do they want to get out of the experience of working with us, right? So, and then how do we make sure that the role and then our styles are compatible with those objectives? So I start with the employee and I really look at, you know, what do they want to get out of this? I know what I need out of the role. But really, I need people that, you know, because we're growing, I need people that will define kind of what the role needs to deliver and build that out and run with it. So that's the kind of profile that I'm looking for. And a big part of that, you know, finding people like that is they've got their own objectives. So what are they? We make a lot of accommodations for people that have, you know, significant responsibilities outside of work, family situations, you know, other commitments, whatever. We're very, very flexible around those things. And as a result, we tend to build really strong loyalty with our team. And so, you know, that means that I've always got to be mindful also of kind of the bigger picture for each of my team members. I also have to be mindful of, as we continue to grow, at what point do we need to expand, you know, somebody's team? So build other people around them to take on, you know, the added work that's coming on. So it's a fine line. We're entirely self-funded. So I don't have a big bank that I can go to. But as we grow in revenue, I'm constantly, thinking ahead at where are we going to be adding capacity. And also checking in with staff, my team members, to make sure that our strategy and our, you know, go-to-market and product roadmaps are not, you know, putting people in a position that they've got more work than they can handle on a sustained basis.
Last segment of every episode, I love to focus on just you personally as an individual, and also some of the, you know, the content diet that you, you know, subscribe to yourself when it comes to consuming content or the information that you let your mind be exposed to. When it comes to staying ahead of the curve or keeping yourself informed on all the things that are going on in your industry, share with us some of the resources or strategies that you utilize on a daily basis to keep yourself informed on that.
Sure. I have a curated news feed. So I tend not to pay a lot of attention to mass media. I've got, you know, a variety of topics that I get, you know, news articles pushed to me from different sources. And those range from, you know, international news to industry news that I'm specifically interested in, new technology developments and so forth. I'm pretty voracious with podcasts. So I'm a pretty avid bike rider. And so every bike ride, I'm listening to podcasts. And have a number of favorites there. And then, frankly, in order to open up my mind, I you know, make sure that I've got a healthy diet of fiction and nonfiction that I'm reading as well. I generally listen to books because I can listen anywhere. I don't have to, you know, yeah. I can listen to the car. You know, I can be doing other things while listening. So that just makes it more efficient for me to consume a lot of.
Speaking of books, do you have a favorite one? Is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
I would say, you know, anyone who's in business, the book that really was very thought-provoking to me was Bob Iger's autobiography. Before he was called back to Disney, his autobiography detailed, you know, his career, which was a remarkable career, and the leadership challenges that he faced at each step, and also all insights on all the other leaders that he had been working with. And I just found that really, you know, insightful. There was a lot of, you know, very good perspectives that I found, you know, learnings from. So I always recommend that to anyone who's in business.
Yeah, that's definitely a classic and one of my favorites as well. Kerry, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation that I personally learned quite a bit. Looking forward to staying in touch with you and perhaps do another episode in about a year to see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So thank you for that.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk to you and your audience.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.